Get ready for Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Listen in as Doug and Aaron provide helpful tips on how to get ready. Ready or not, here comes Ready Radio.
Good morning, everybody. You're listening to Ready Radio this week. It's just me on the air today. My co-host is off on location and is unavailable for today's episode. But I have a really interesting topic for everybody this morning, and I really want to dig into this because this week we've been getting an awful lot of emails. I mean, they've really been pouring in, probably because of the president coming to Atlanta to talk about Ebola. A lot of them have to do with ISIS or ISIL or IS, Islamic State, and the possibility of terrorism here in the U.S., the open borders. There's a lot of political turmoil right now, and we've been getting a lot of response on this. And it's really interesting to me because a lot of the times, you know, we get questions that are very related to, like, the core of the show, things about, you know, well, you know, how do I do, or is there a good website for canning, or is there more information about the recipes that you guys posted, or how can I be more involved in prepping, or, you know, I have directions to your sponsor over at TruPrep, all these sorts of kind of basic intrinsic prepping sort of questions come up every week, and we answer them, you know, catch as catch can. You know, we send an email response. Sometimes, you know, people want to, you know, have a little more detailed discussion, and there's some back and forth, but these are kind of like the general questions we get every week. Well, this week there's been a lot more interest in terrorism and what's going on in the U.S. and you know, we've touched on this before. You know, some of the topics we've discussed, you know, like zombies and things like that are more broad-based and, you know, total apocalyptic end-of-the-world sort of scenarios. But most of the topics we've been choosing to tackle have been more, you know, natural disaster-based or economic collapse-based, things that are not really political in nature. And that had been a strategic decision on my part throughout this show because my belief is that prepping and about being a more prepared person, about taking a Jeffersonian view of life, doesn't have anything to do with politics. Because it doesn't matter if the president is a Republican or a Democrat. It doesn't matter if the House is controlled by one party or the other. In the end, you know, who's in control of this nation doesn't affect if there's going to be a tornado. It doesn't affect whether or not the dollar is crumbling. I honestly, at this point, I think that we're beyond the point of no return as far as federal monetary policy and keeping the dollar afloat. So it's an inevitability. It's whether you take the fast train or the slow train, and in the end, it's not going to matter because there's going to be some sort of horrible, horrible economic disaster befalling us. I mean, we skirted it in 2008, and we did it in such a way that we just, you know, kicked the can down the road. And doing that, you know, it's great for right now, but eventually that debt is going to come due, and what are you going to do? Well, it's just going to happen. So it doesn't really matter to me who's in the office of the presidency, who's in Congress. Where I think politics becomes much more, you know, intrinsic and important is when we're talking about local politics. You know, your county commission, your local dog catcher, your sheriff. Oh my goodness, people, the most important office you can elect in your area as a sheriff. I'm speaking as someone who's got over a decade of experience in criminal law, both as a prosecutor and as a defense attorney. And trust me, there is no more powerful person in your area than your sheriff. A lot of counties, especially here in Georgia, have moved away from sheriffs. They're using, you know, county police and police chiefs over counties and municipalities. But there's nothing quite like a sheriff out there who's elected by the people, who has to stand for re-election, who's answerable to his electorate and not to, you know, the city commission or the mayor or somebody else in politics, but they're answerable directly to us. And that's an important thing. And you get a lot of interaction and get to know your local sheriff. I mean, actually get involved in their activities. And you know, when they throw here in North Georgia, there's Cobb County. And Cobb County every year has the annual Sheriff's Corn Boil, where the sheriff puts on this big party, basically, and everybody can come out and talk to him about what's going on. My goodness, what a chance. What a chance to really be impacting local law enforcement. There's no better opportunity. And everybody who's a resident of Cobb County, who votes in Cobb County, who doesn't go to this thing, I'm sorry, is an absolute fool. Because here's an opportunity to have direct impact on the way the laws are enforced in your area. I mean, we can elect legislatures who change the laws, and you can have a legislature, Trust me. I've been involved in this end, too. I've done lobbying. I've done interaction with the court system and with the legislative branch. And my goodness, I don't care what you do. You pass a law that says you're allowed to carry your gun in the airport, and the very first time that somebody does, they're arrested, and then there's a lawsuit, and then the lawsuit, the judge turns around and says, where it says you're allowed to carry your gun in the airport doesn't apply to Hartsfield-Jackson because it's not an airport. And you sit here and go, what on earth happened? How did that happen? Who is this judge, some Carter appointee who's sitting on the bench, who comes back and says the clear, plain language of the law doesn't apply to this case? Why? Because it isn't what the judge wants to do. So here, you know, you've elected your legislator, you and your neighbors have elected similar legislators who have the same beliefs that you do. You've gone to the Capitol month after month and lobbied and pushed, and you've gone to Senate subcommittee hearings. You've testified in front of the Senate. You've talked about how important this legislation is, that people be able to allowed to carry their firearms into the non-secure parts of the airport so that they can defend themselves if something were to happen, that it's a natural right, that this is the way it's supposed to be, that Georgia law is fully informed and enforcing it. And yet, what happens? A judge, an appointed judge from the federal, you know, a federal government judge comes in and completely eviscerates the law as far as he's concerned, simply because he can. So where do we get into actually being able to change the law? If we write a new law and the law is completely cut out from underneath us because of a judge's decision, where do we get that? Let me tell you this. Here in Georgia, judges are elected. You know what that means? That means that they stand for election every few years and have to be answerable to the people. Do you know how many judges lose their seat once they're an incumbent? None. I can't even recall a single example of a judge who has up as an incumbent on a ballot losing their seat. You know, it's so bad that the judges go through these weird conniptions to try to keep from having to stand for election the first time. They wait, and one judge will retire in the middle of their term so that their replacement is appointed by the governor. And then when they stand for election on their own right, they're standing for election as an incumbent, and it's easy. There's no question what's going to happen. There was in one of the counties right here in North Georgia, Paulding County, there was a judge who was getting ready to retire, and everyone knew it, and all the people who wanted to be judge to stand for this open seat, this is the big chance, this is your one chance, if you're going to run for judge, here it is, there's no incumbent to run against, everyone's got to stand on their own record, let's have a full, fair, and free election. So what does that judge do? He comes in, he files on the very first day of filing that he's going to run for re-election. What does that do? All the people who wanted to run against him went, nah, I'm not going to waste my money and time on this. He's standing for re-election again. So, on the very last day that you can file to say that you're going to run and ask to be on the ballot, the very last day, the judge's daughter goes and signs and files and says that she's going to run against her dad. The ballot's closed. No one's able to get on the ballot anymore. The next day, the old judge says, yeah, I decided not to run. I'm going to step down. So now his daughter is running unopposed on the ballot. This is the way that politics works, right? This is the way it's supposed to work in America. But instead, we've got nothing but corruption every which way you look. I mean, when I was a prosecutor, that was my biggest... It was the bane of my existence, is to see the corruption that was going on in state and local government. And it was frustrating because people, it's so easy to get involved now. It's so easy to get into local government politics and get things moving. This is our big chance. This is where we can make a difference. One vote does not matter a hill of beans in the Senate or the presidential race. In the presidential race, it's all handled by the Electoral College anyway. So it doesn't matter at all. Instead, let's get involved locally. Let's get involved where we can make a difference, where the police officers are actually drawing their salaries from, where the local law enforcement are accountable to us directly, where 10 votes can swing an entire election, right? This is where you get involved. And the sheriff is a great place to do it because in most counties that don't have a county police department, the sheriff does the enforcement of laws in the county outside the municipalities. And that sheriff is going to set the way that laws are enforced and the tenor and the amount of attention that the officers place on certain crimes versus others. They're going to listen to what we feel is really dangerous. And my goodness, there are real crimes out there that need to be prosecuted. There are real crimes that need to be taken into account and need to be focused on. These are things like domestic violence and the people who are manufacturing methamphetamines and drunk drivers. These are people that need to be held to task, but not people who are doing their, you know, honest to goodness best to defend themselves, to defend their families, to be good, honest, hardworking people who pay their taxes and go to church on Sunday and try to live their lives as best they can. They don't need to be targeted over BS types of crimes that are being brought up and enacted by a runaway legislature that draws people into it. I'm getting a little bit off target because we were originally going to be talking about terrorism and politics in regards to terrorism and how that impacts prepping. And it's tangential to what I see as the common core of this show, which is being ready for a disaster. And the disasters may be brought on by man-made. I mean, when the Twin Towers collapsed, and we just had the anniversary of that just recently, where we remembered what happened with 9/11, and we were brought back to those days. And I'm going to tell my 9/11 story for the first time on the air in the next segment. But as we look back, these are important things, and I can see why there's such angst right now. I can see why it's an important topic for our listeners. And so we're going to delve into terrorism and how to defend and prepare yourself for a terrorist attack in the next segment, in light of 9/11, in light of the ISIL, whatever is threat that they're going to slap a moniker on. Stick with us. We are going to take a brief commercial break. I hear the music starting up in the background, so we will be back in just a moment to talk about terrorism and prepping. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now back to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron.
All right, folks, we're back. Thanks for sticking with me through the commercial break. I know that we had some great ads from sponsors, not only for us, but for the station there. And it gives a little bit of a chance for me to catch my breath after that monologue. But I had, before we went into the break, I'd mentioned that I was going to tell my 9/11 story. And I know everybody in this generation, although it's moving on, I mean, we're in 2014 now, time is rapidly slipping away. I mean, it's been 13 years, and there's a whole generation of young people who are living now, who are entering high school. Think about that, folks. We have kids in high school now that do not remember 9/11, which is astounding. But more importantly, do not remember a free America. Can you believe that? There are people who are alive today who are entering high school who do not remember a time in America when you could simply go and get on a plane or go and say goodbye to your relatives in the terminal instead of having to wait outside. There are people who do not remember being able to, without fear of having their bodily cavities searched, just get a plane ticket and travel about the country. I mean, this is a horrible prospect. And here we are, 13 years into this war on terror. And are we any safer? Are we any better off? Have our liberties been advanced? No, not at all. It's worse. Everything is getting worse. Entropy. Entropy in the society. Entropy. You know, here's an old joke for everybody. Entropy, it ain't what it used to be, right? Well, here we are, 13 years into this war, and we're no better off. Our liberties are being eroded. We're being spied on by our own government through the NSA and their programs. And, I mean, we keep hearing these stories about everything from, you know, software programs that read our emails to fake cell phone towers that are keeping tabs on our cell phones to, I mean, and if you go down to the radical fringe stuff, then you're talking about microphones and dishwashers and who knows what else. But here we are, 13 years into this war, and we're watching our liberty be eroded daily. We're seeing now that, you know, there people can be held indefinitely. There's been a news story that broke just recently about how one of the major cell phone carriers had fought to keep from having to release data to the NSA, and the FISA court had ruled that no, you have to turn over all this information without a court order, without warrant, without due process, without any of the trappings of liberty or freedom of our constitutional system. And they had to turn over all this data and help build the PRISM program, which allows them to read our emails and see what we're doing on a daily basis. I was listening to, who was it? I think it was Rush Limbaugh this last week, who was talking about how one of the major companies had run a computer program to predict the next election and how even this massive computer program that follows trends on Twitter and Facebook, which is publicly available information, but still, reading trends and doing data mining off of open sources, came up that the election was at 50.2% in favor of the Republicans and 49.8% in favor of the Democrats, an almost even split. And here he's talking about how, you know, how close the election is going to be and how important this election is going to be and how it's going to change the fate of the nation. And I'm sitting here listening to this going, holy crap, here we are in 2014 and the computers are predicting our very lives. You know, and you don't even have to have a massive program to get into this and tell you how you're going to vote. Instead, just use your smartphone. I was sending a text the other night and someone was looking over my shoulder and they said, wow, so that's how you text so fast. I'm like, what do you mean? He says, well, it predicts what you're going to say. And you know what? I realize that it predicts with an amazing degree of accuracy what I'm going to say. Based on who I'm texting and what I'm saying, it can predict with a very high degree of accuracy what my next four or five words are going to be. This is scary stuff. So here we are. Here we are, you know, over a decade, almost a decade and a half into this continuing war on terror. We've invaded in Iraq. We've invaded in Afghanistan. We pulled out of Iraq. We're going back into Iraq. We've got turmoil in Ukraine. Russia and Ukraine are in a standstill. Israel is being threatened on a daily basis. Throw into the top of this Ebola. There is huge uncertainty. And that's some of the point of this program. That's the core belief of Ready Radio, is that there is uncertainty in an uncertain world, but we do not have to live in fear. We do not have to be people who don't know what's going on, who aren't ready, who aren't prepared. No matter what happens, whether you have a loss of your job, whether you go through a divorce, whether you're in the middle of some personal turmoil, whether the stock market crashes, whether the dollar collapses, whether Ebola hits the U.S. and causes a pandemic, whether there's a solar flare that knocks out the entire electrical grid, none of that matters if you prepare. And the way you prepare is very basic and very simple, and it is not expensive, and it is not the end of the world, and it's not changing your life. It is adapting to the idea of being self-sufficient. If you have some stored up food, if you have a source of water and a way to filter it, if you have good solid shelter and a way to heat and cool it, if you have, you know, the basic necessities of life, and you choose to live debt-free, to steal a little bit, I mean, sometimes I feel like I'm repeating the best things of the best people on radio. And you know, being a lawyer, that kind of comes with the territory. You do your motions practice and someone else files a motion, you go, oh, well, that's an interesting idea. And then you start using that idea too. You know, I'm sitting here and I listen to news incessantly. I listen to every little bit of news I can get my hands on. I love to listen to NPR, and I love to listen to Rush Limbaugh, and I love to listen to Alex Jones, and I love to listen to Mark Stein, and I love to listen to Mark Levin. I love to listen to these people because they have great ideas. Now, you know, in 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, they're repeating themselves a lot, it seems like, but there are some really core ideas that are out there that are important, and I feel like I'm pulling all of these ideas together and offering them up to you in the hope that you'll look at this and say, hey, this is important. I want to be more prepared. I want to have a plan. And that's where we come to, is we need to have a plan and a point and some security in our lives. And the way we do that is to prepare. Back to the core fundamental thoughts of this show is to be prepared. So what are we going to do? We're going to make sure that we have some food for our family, things that we can make, you know, no matter what. If you lost your job today, do you have enough food to get by until you could find another job? Why not? Is it that hard to do? Is it that hard to start to garden? Now, I know that some people live in apartments, and it's not feasible to have a full garden. But backyard gardening, everybody who lives in a suburb, why not have some raised bed gardens in the back? Have lettuce, have tomatoes. Now we're going into fall here in the South. Have kale, have okra, have turnips. And if you grow these things and then take an afternoon, a Saturday afternoon with your children to can them, to prepare them, to put them up, there's $500 worth of food that you got for free, basically. I mean, isn't that an amazing concept? Just to think about the possibility there. A while back, we talked about terror attacks and martial law. You know, if martial law was declared and you couldn't leave your house, would you really want to go stand in the food lines to get whatever they were handing out? Or would you rather have a store of stuff? Would you rather have things that help with normalcy? Another main driving theme of this program is normalcy. That your children do not have to go through a tragedy and feel displaced. And instead, they can still have Cocoa Krispies, even if the milk is now coming from your neighbor's cow rather than from the store. They can still have, you know, Rice Krispie treats or some familiar candy. Go to Sam's Club and buy a case of their favorite candy bar and put them up where they don't know that they are, so they don't get eaten every day. But instead, when something goes wrong, you say, hey kids, you know, I know this has been tough this last week. You know, we've had to stay at home because of X, Y, or Z, but you know what? I got some Butterfinger bars. Would anyone like a Butterfinger bar? Yay! Thanks, Dad! And off we go. And everybody feels better. When I was first getting started prepping, I brought up this idea. I was on a forum online, and we were talking about prepping. And I said, you know, I've been thinking about going out and buying a couple of cases of candy bars for a prep to help be ready. And I got jumped. Everyone came out of the room. Oh, that's a horrible idea. That doesn't have any good calories. You know what you should do? You should get whole wheat instead. Why don't you go get some whole wheat and some barley and put that up as a prep? And I'm like, I'm not arguing that you shouldn't have whole wheat flour. I'm not arguing that you shouldn't have, you know, barley or some other form of good grain. I'm not arguing that you shouldn't have canned vegetables and canned fruits, particularly home canned, where you know what's gone into it and there's no preservatives. There's just, you know, the preservatives are things like sugar and vitamin C, things that are good for you rather than monosodium glutamate and aspartame. But instead, you know, they didn't see the utility of it. But the utility in a survival situation, they're surviving and then there's thriving. And we want to thrive. We want to thrive in every situation that we're put in. We want to be the people that when the push comes to shove, we are going around with a candy bar in our pocket, a smile on our kids' face, and saying, we can tackle this. Don't worry. We've got it, kids. You don't have to worry at all. And that's our goal. That's our goal as parents, is to take care of the problems for the kids. They don't need to grow up so fast. Even in a world that's turned on its head, that's something that really got to me about watching The Walking Dead. And I know The Walking Dead is an Atlanta institution, and it is a proud and wonderful thing. I've met people from the production crew. They're wonderful people. It's a fantastic show. It's well written, well done. Love the show to death. Nothing to complain about The Walking Dead. But you want to know what drives me nuts? The way the kids are portrayed on there, that they have suddenly just adapted to this horrific world and they have a skewed sense of morality or a skewed sense of right and wrong because of the world that they live in, and the adults are the ones that are lagging behind because they're holding on to the way things used to be and the kids have moved on. I don't think that that's right at all. I think that the parents, even in a zombie apocalypse, it is a parent's prerogative to shield those children in such a degree that they are still allowed to be children. And I use the zombie apocalypse, you know, analogy, but what I'm talking about goes all the way down through the levels of and degrees of things that can go wrong. You know, whether it's the EMP that knocks out the grid and suddenly we're back to the 1840s, or whether it's a divorce or a loss of a job, the children shouldn't suffer. They shouldn't be put in the middle of this. They shouldn't have to worry about it. Their fear should be calm. They should be taken care of. That is an adult responsibility. That is a parent's responsibility. That's what it means to be an educated, fully functional adult, is that when the times are tough, that you take care of the children, that you take care of your neighbors in such a degree that you're able to, so that it doesn't destroy your family, but in such a way that you are able to help other people to the fullest degree that is possible in your situation. Because we are not animals. I had this discussion this week too, folks, and this is an important thing. I will still tell my 9/11 story in the next segment. I promise we will come back to my 9/11 story and how it brought tears to my eye that day. But until then, one of the discussions I had had with a friend of mine this week was about the nature, human nature. What is human nature, and how does that impact the way that we view society and the way that we interact with each other? Because I think that human nature is vastly different than nasty, brutish, and short, which is the way that it was being portrayed to me by one of my friends. I think that human nature is much more than just self-interest, naked, brutal, self-interest. I think that human nature is transcendent. I think, folks, and I don't mean to preach, but I'm on a roll right now. I think that we are made in the image of a holy God, and that we are more than what is being portrayed in the media, that we are more than what is being seen on a day-to-day basis, that we are able to transcend, that we are luminous beings, and that we can shine. And I think that that is an important aspect of everything we do, including being prepared for an emergency. And when I come back from the next break, I want to talk a little bit about the difference between an animal and a human being and when we can get to them. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now back to Ready Radio with Doug and Aaron.
All right, folks, we're back. And when we took the break, I was starting to articulate some of my feelings about human nature. And this is important in a disaster preparedness. This is important politically. This is important in just about every aspect that we can look at is how you view human nature. Is human nature, I mean, I guess Karl Marx would have called humans, you know, on a upward tick, trying to become more and trying to become greater and going from the this base condition up to eventual communism where everybody acts altruistically and life is perfect and we're wonderful creatures and nobody from whom according to their abilities to which according to their needs and nobody has to worry at all. And then you've got this other theory where you've got like Thomas Hobbes saying, no, life is nasty, brutish, and short, and people are always going to be wicked and selfish and cruel creatures, and there's no hope no matter what you do. And in some ways, maybe I'm a little bit more liberal than a lot of people who know me well would like to think, but the truth is that both are correct. I think that people inherently have a sin nature. And because of that, we are brought down to being nasty, brutish, and short-lived creatures. That our sin nature, our inherent sinfulness has caused that quality to be in us. However, we can transcend that and start to be better people. Now, will most people achieve this? No, which is why Marx is a fool, because he thought that everybody would get to a point where they all acted this way, and they won't. People will continue to be horrible, horrible creatures. So, what does that leave us? One of my favorite books, in fact, my favorite book of all time is Dune by Frank Herbert. And Dune is a political masterpiece. It's science fiction. It's couched in science fiction terms. But the interplay between religion and politics in Dune is brilliance at its best. And I encourage every one of my listeners, as soon as you finish the 299 Days book series, which the author was on with us last week, and Glenn Tate is an amazing author, and he writes amazing books. And I encourage every single one of you to go out and buy all 10 of his books as they come out. Get the audiobook, listen to him in the car. It's fantastic. But as soon as you're done with that, go get Dune by Frank Herbert. It was the only book that won both the Hugo and Nebula Awards in the same year. It's been out for over 40 years. It's a fantastic novel. Fantastic novel. So, go get Dune. One of the principles of Dune is that there are human beings, but there are few and far between. And that resonates with my philosophy. And maybe it shaped my philosophy, because I read Dune when I was in fourth grade, and it really impacted the way I looked at the world. I mean, I went to a private Christian school. I had been kind of sheltered from, shall we say, the modern philosophy and thought. But when I hit Dune and it dawned on me that, yeah, I can see a lot of what's going on in this religious institution in the pages of Dune, and I can see a lot of the politics off the news in the pages of Dune. And this is the way people really interact with each other, because people are nasty, brutish, and short, but that's not what a human being is. A human being is more. A human being is a luminous, wonderful creature made in God's image who can transcend these base desires and act altruistically. Do most people do that? No. Can they? Yes. Will they? No. So what does that do? That changes the way we look at other human beings. In a disaster situation, how are most people going to react? They're going to react in pure, naked self-interest. Do we have to be that way? No. We can be more. We can be true human beings. We can be transcendent. And the way that we become transcendent human beings is to look at each other in the light of not what can someone do for us, but what can we do for them. We look at our children that way. Why can't we look at everybody that way? Why can't we be more? And so now we come around kind of full circle to everyone's afraid of IS, Islamic State, or ISIS, or ISIL. Everybody is afraid of Ebola. Everybody is afraid of what may be coming. And this, you know, on the eve of the September 11th the tragedy that happened then back in 2001 and our remembrance of it, this is where I think that it's an appropriate time for me to talk about my experience on September 11th. When September 11th happened, I was a first-year law school student at Emory University. I was, that morning, I had just graduated from college. I was a young man. I was 19 years old, and I was in the law library. Early in the morning, I got there just as soon as they opened and started attacking the information that I needed to get through for my classes that day. It's an intense, voracious process being in law school, and I had just started, and I was eager to learn and to excel and to be the best that it could possibly be. And so I'm in the law library, I'm using the computers, and the guy next to me who's reading the New York Times or something says, "Huh, plane just crashed into the World Trade Center." And I looked up from my reading, I said, "Oh, did you know that that has happened before?" Well, not the World Trade Center, but that's happened before in World War II. A bomber hit the Empire State Building. He says, "Wow, I bet that was really horrific." I said, "Yeah, I bet this was too." And I went back to my reading. You know, stuff happens. There's nothing that can be done about it. And I don't have any friends or family in New York City or who are flying through New York at the time. So it didn't really impact me personally. It was just an interesting news fact. So then we heard this kind of rumble coming through the law library, and someone said a second plane hit the Twin Towers. At that point, I knew that something else was going on. I mean, it wasn't just another accident like had happened with the bomber and the Empire State Building, but something was really being done. And I went out to the common area, and there was a whole bunch of students who were standing in the common area, and they had wheeled out an old cathode ray tube TV and plugged it in and turned it on, and there was the picture of the smoking towers. They kept replaying the second plane hitting it. And then as we stood there, one of the professors came out and said, "I don't care what's on the TV. Nothing is important in my class. All of you get into my class, or I'm going to hold it against you." And not a single soul moved. And then the first tower started to fall. And as I watched it crumble, I turned around and went straight to my car. My car was parked in the parking deck right next to the Centers for Disease Control. Emory's campus encompasses the Centers for Disease Control. And as a government building, I had this sinking suspicion that with a huge terroristic attack like had happened in New York, that government facilities would be locked down. So I literally ran across campus, got to my car, and started to come down. As I got down, there was a security officer who waved me off and said, "Sorry, the parking ramp is sealed. You're going to have to leave your car here. No one's allowed out." I nodded to him, turned the car, went over to the other ramp, the way to get in, went down the on ramp, got to the where you had to swipe your tag to get the gate to open, hopped out of the car, swiped the tag, went out the inn, got out onto Briarcliff Road, and took off. Shortly after I made it out that way, they closed that entrance too. So I had made it out of the campus, and I was driving in my car, and I was going down. I remember it just as if it were yesterday. It was a bright, sunny day. I had the windows down and the tops out of my car. I was driving. It was a beautiful day. It was absolutely stunningly beautiful. And as I'm driving, there is not a single car anywhere to be seen. There are no cars on 285. There are no cars on 78. There are no cars anywhere. It is completely empty. It's a ghost town. I'm frantically calling my mom, trying to make sure that she's okay, because she was working for a government agency at the time, and I figured that she was under lockdown too, and just trying to figure out what all was going to happen and where how to get in contact with my friends. I had just recently moved to the area. I didn't know very many people here. All of my friends were back up in Minnesota. I tried to reach out to them. All of the lines were busy. There was no means of communication around anybody. And then I'm driving along, I'm approaching 285, and we're going to have to take a quick commercial break. I'll finish the story when we come back. You're listening to Ready Radio on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.
And now, back to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy.
Welcome back, folks. When I took the break, we were just kind of in the middle of my rendition of my experience from the September 11th tragedy. So When I left off, I was talking about approaching 285, and if you're just tuning in, I had described, you know, seeing the towers fall on the TV while I was at Emory University School of Law, watching, barely escaping the Center for Disease Control parking ramp before they locked it down in a government lockdown, and now I'm on the freeway driving along with no other cars there, and truth be told, I'm sure the statute of limitations is well run, so let's just say I was speeding quite a bit. So I'm flying down the road, and there's not another car to be seen, not anywhere. And I look up ahead, and I can see 285. I'm going to be going underneath 285. I'm looking to see how much traffic is up on that road, and there's not a car. There's not a car to be seen. And then I see an airplane. And I look at it, and for a second I realize that it's a fighter jet. And then I see that there are two more. There's three of them total. They're flying in close formation, and they're flying along 285. They appear to be following the road. I was like, well, that's really interesting. I wonder what the fighter jets are doing following 285. Well, 285 is part of the flight plan for Hartsfield-Jackson. They go out over it and then come in and land. So then it dawns on me that these planes are out there in case there's another errant airplane. And I think, That's a terrifying thought. I wonder what's, you know, if there's something going on here too. And then I look on the wings and I notice that all of them are fully loaded. They all have missiles on their wings. They have an extra fuel tank underneath. And they're flying CAP, or they're flying a combat air patrol over American soil, circling Atlanta, one of the largest cities in America with the busiest airport in the world. And they're flying up there in order to shoot down American airplanes. If there's another plane that's been hijacked, I had no doubt that their mission, their orders, their purpose, being fully loaded with missiles like that, was to shoot down any such plane that they came across and that was non-responsive. And as I saw that, as I ducked underneath 285 and popped out the other side, tears welled up in my eyes. Because I realized that this was a point that America had fundamentally changed. This was a point that we were no longer a nation that was innocent in so many ways, that we were becoming like Israel, like so many other places, a nation under siege. And what was this nation going to look like after this? Who are we going to be as Americans? Are we still going to be a land of freedom and opportunity? Are we still going to be a land of respect and love for each other? Are we going to be a nation like Ronald Reagan had? I mean, when I look at the Reagan years, when I look at even the Clinton years, I see an America that had hope and had dreams and had this undeniable sense of purpose that things were going to be better. Things for our children were going to be better than they were for us. We were ascendant. We were moving forward. We were becoming more. And when Gore and Bush fought it out, they were both fighting under this premise of doing more and being a great nation and moving into the 21st century and leading the world. And Bush won, and here he was, you know, starting to take the reins. And right at the very beginning of his presidency, this happens. And here we are. Here we are flying combat air patrol. And I saw, for the briefest of seconds, when I saw those planes flying over 285, I had this vision of an America that was no longer free, of an America where we were going to be contemplating military actions on our soils, a place where posse comitatus did not apply, a place where we were be under siege from martial law. And I thought, we cannot allow this to happen. We as a republic, we as an electorate, we as a free people cannot allow this to happen. And here I am, poised at the greatest crossroads in American history, a place where I can do the most good. I am in law school. I am coming out to enter a field where I can impact the way this nation and this country develop and grow and keep that sort of nightmare situation where a runaway government is taking control or taking note of everything that we do, where they monitor our communications, where the fear of the government. Did you know that just this last week, folks, just this last week, there was a landmark decision where the Naval Crime Information Center or something like that, NCIS, the people that the TV show is based on, the investigators were conducting a investigation in Washington State on internet crimes. And they found somebody had no connection to the military, nothing whatsoever. They turned the information over to the state police. The police made arrests. There was a prosecution. And then there was an appeal from the prosecution. And the appellate issue was all of this information came from the military, and the military is not allowed to be spying on Americans. And the Court of Appeals out there in, on, I think it was Washington State, turned around and said, you know what, you're right. There's an act of Congress called Posse Comitatus that says that the military can't be used to enforce civilian laws. And that's exactly what happened here. They were fishing, they found a civilian, they turned over the information, and because they were trying to use the military, or the military was acting in such a way, not being the military, but being local law enforcement. And this is a terrifying prospect, and we need good people. We need good lawyers, we need good citizens, we need people who believe in freedom and justice to stand up and stop things like this. Or else, the next thing you know, that the military is going to be the ones who are standing on the street corner saying, you have to stay in your house. That is not America. Flying a combat air patrol over a major city is not America. This is not what we came and fought and died in freedom. This is not what my grandfather fought in World War II for. This is not what your parents fought in Vietnam and Korea for. This is not what our sons and daughters and brothers are fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq for today, is to turn America into a police state. We are supposed to stand up for right and truth and freedom, and we are not. And it gets me very excited when I start to see the emails and the people who are contacting us with this kind of fervent belief. And here I am trying to get it out to you folks so that you see that you are not alone, that there are people who believe in freedom, who want to see that there are no searches without a proper warrant issued, that we are standing in the gap. This is the most important fight of our age. And on that note, I am running dangerously out of time, and I want to thank our sponsors over at True Prep. They do a fantastic job of helping people get ready, whether it's their long-term storage food or their canning classes or their soap-making classes, things that help you take a more Jeffersonian perspective, things that help you see and feel and do more and be a part of your community and be a part of your environment and be a part of your landscape. They have tremendous things. And the product that I really want to spotlight this week, coming up into the fall season, whether it's a natural emergency or a man-made emergency, it's time to get a car kit ready, folks. I mean, you're going to be traveling around. You might be like me. You might be at Emory when the disaster happens and they lock your car in the parking garage. And what are you going to do? You have got to have a get-home kit in your car, something that has food, water, basic medical supplies, a change of shoes, ready to go. And the best place to get that is at True Prep. They have ready-to-go packs that you can just walk in and say, here's my needs, and they will help you assemble your pack, and you'll walk out somewhere in the neighborhood of as little as $50. You can have a good pack for the back of your car that can help get you through any emergency situation. You know, this winter is supposed to be one of the most coldest, busiest, snowiest winters in the Southeast in history. The Farmer's Almanac and all of the weather pattern predictions that I've been looking at over the last couple weeks are predicting record snowfalls and cold temperatures. We remember what happened last year with snowpocalypse. We remember people being stuck on 285 for hours and hours and hours, some over a day. And if you don't have a backpack full of supplies that you need for that kind of situation, you're going to be in trouble. Invest $50. Go to True Prep today. Visit their location in Marietta and ask for Ron, the manager of that location. Ron will set you up. I can guarantee it. I've met Ron. I've talked to him. Good guy. He will set you up and help you get together everything that you need to be ready for snowpocalypse this year. So the True Prep product of the week, your car's get-home bag, available only at True Prep. Swing in, get ready, and be prepared. Folks, this has been a real pleasure for me to be able to expound upon some of my beliefs, to be able to tell you a truly heartfelt story from my own past about a disaster and what helped me wake up to what was going on in this country. We are running out of time, and I just want to encourage you to check out our Facebook page. We've got so many people have liked us and who are actively involved. Not only are we on Facebook, but we're on Twitter. You can check us out there. I try to encourage to push through some stories that I know our listeners would be interested in, things with prepping, things with politics, things with communicable diseases, even some just fun science stuff. Our Twitter feed is readyradio.net. And on Facebook, we're Ready Radio. You can also visit us on the web, www.readyradio.net, where you can check out old shows. You can send us an email to doug@readyradio.net or aaron@readyradio.net. You can also contact me at my law firm if you have a legal issue that comes up, doug@kingslawoffice.com, or visit me at www.kingslawoffice.com. That's where I am most weekdays, taking care of people who are in need or in danger in the best way that I know how. Folks, next week we're going to have another exciting topic. I hope that you enjoy your weekend. Spend some time with your family. Take the day to connect with your children, connect with your parents, connect with your neighbors. Get back to the soil. Take a Jeffersonian look. Get out and enjoy some of the fall fairs and festivals that are going around. Go apple picking in an apple orchard and enjoy what makes America great. To see the humble goodness that our nation has, that every other nation aspires to. See what makes us a truly independent, powerful, great nation. And our power does not lie in battleships. It doesn't lie in mega corporations. Our power as a nation resides in each and individual, in every person who believes in liberty, and everyone who's willing to take a stand. Be that person this week. Tune in next week, same time, same station, the Ready Radio. Thank you all.
You've been listening to Ready Radio with Doug and Amy. It's emergency preparedness for everyone. Brought to you by TruPrep. For all your prepping needs, visit TruPrep online at truprep.com or visit a TruPrep store in Roswell or Marietta. Tune in each week as Doug and Amy get you ready for anything that comes your way. Ready Radio, Saturday evenings at 5, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.